They were high school sweethearts who got married and had two kids. It's the Brainiacs from a new location. They work all day and that's okay. They're the Brainiacs. She is a journalist, he is a walker. They talk about the news and whatever they want. In the fight for justice, they're on your side, you can't.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low-effort, low-quality podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Hello.
That's one of the worst intro songs of all the different
You don't like pop versions.
Punk? No, it sucks.
As a genre?
I'm just saying that sucks.
What about when they go, all the small things? But that one's
not ringing any good bells. I mean, yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
It does not strike
That's the
me.
Peak. That's the top one that ever produced out of the genre.
That guy's, his voice sounded really nasal.
That's the bit, though.
Wow, thanks.
They like the nasal sound.
It's so weird. Sucks. God. Yeah, I remember.
I'm not as down on it as Liz is.
Hating that at the time. When was that? We were in, like, high school?
Yeah, that's younger? When pop. That's when it was all big, you know?
Yeah.
What were the big, let's see what ChatGPT says.
For the chicks with the.
What were the top?
The self-tanner and the flat ironed hair and the like sideways trucker hats. You remember the trucker hats?
I do remember the trucker hats.
Yeah.
Trucker hats.
That's when low rise was still really in.
I managed to get my hands on a Girls Gone Wild trucker hat.
Uh-huh.
And we had a hat day at school.
Okay.
And I thought, this would be an interesting, I wonder what they would do with this. I wasn't trying to send a message. I was just trying to see how would the system react to this?
Yeah. Did you find out?
Yeah, actually I had, this is quite an interesting story.
I've never heard this.
So at some point, someone told me to take it off.
Okay, was this at Martin?
I believe this was middle school.
Okay, so you were at Bowles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was middle school, yeah. And I brought a second hat. And so I indicated I was not going to take it off because it's hat day, you know? Yeah. And it wouldn't be fair, obviously, yeah. How am I going to go without a hat on hat day? But then I did subsequently take it off. And then, but by that point, something had happened in terms of, you know, notifying the administration about the unruly hat wearer.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone came to, you know, enforce the hat edict.
Yeah.
And I had already switched my hat to a normal hat.
Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly, but I remember it just being very confusing. No one really knew what to do at that point because the person, you know, who had been told that I had an inappropriate hat, I don't think was told exactly what the hat said. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of, they didn't know that the hat that I was wearing wasn't inappropriate.
Yeah.
They were just like, well, I was told he was wearing an inappropriate hat and he wouldn't take it off. And now he's wearing this hat. I don't know if it's, I don't know. Maybe it means something that's, I don't get it or something, you know? Like it could be some kind of slang that the kids are into or something. And so I was like, I don't know why I always get myself in these weird pickles. And I'm like, it's not inappropriate. What's inappropriate about it? And they're like, you know. And I'm like, I don't know. And I didn't tell them. I wasn't like, I know they were talking about another hat that I took off. I definitely wasn't going to tell them that because I want to run this out.
Yeah.
See what happens. And when they eventually realize the hat is not inappropriate.
Yeah.
God, that was good. That was a good.
That's a great bit.
It was a good, yeah. Just a little, just pushing buttons, just having fun, just seeing if you can make little heads spin around weird ways.
Maybe having what some might call an aggressive orientation to the world. So how did a 13-year-old Matt Brunig get a hold of a Girls Gone Wild hat?
I actually think it was the ticket.
Oh.
Because remember I was on the P1 Wild Ass Circus
yeah.
with Big Dick Hunter?
Yeah.
And I think I got it there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like just, I don't know, as a joke. Like, oh, we have this hat. Like, would it be funny to give you this hat since you're a child? I'm like, yeah, it would be funny. That's fucking hilarious. Give it to me.
Yeah, that's back when people had, you know, balls about this kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you could just straight up riff on it would be funny to give a kid a Girls Gone Wild hat.
And it was.
Can't do that.
And then I extended the humor into more of a kind of confusing procedural administrative miscommunication kind of humor, you know?
Yeah.
More of a British kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm glad that even at that age, you found ways to entertain yourself.
Essential pop punk bands. So it won't tell me the top ones. It'll tell me the essential ones. You know, it's always hedging. ChatGPT does not have courage.
Yeah, it's totally obsequious. It's a liar. It's like having a simpering little slave. It's just is
you can
totally
prompt it. You can prompt it to push through that if you do it the right way.
I don't trust it. It does very good at making recipes, though.
So if I go, what are the top punk bands? And then I say, and don't hedge and say, you know, these are popular, and you know, it is a difference of opinion. Give me the objectively best ones. If you, you know, really push it, Will goes, got it, no hedging. If we're talking objectively top punk bands, based on a mix of influence, commercial success, and critical acclaim, here's the definitive ranking.
Yeah.
And then it just gives me the same list it gave when it was hedging.
Yeah.
Anyways, number one is Green Day.
Yeah, okay. That's a band that sucks. So
they have an album called
out.
Dookie, which I think is about
nice
about shit, right?
Cool. Does Jane know about this?
What is Dookie about? It's about disaffection, boredom, anxiety, and alienation.
Okay. All right. That's I guess something that we all experience at times.
I don't mean to, because, you know, you could do this when you kind of music. So ChatGPT says, here's the notable quote from that album, from the song Basket Case. Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, look, I don't know what to say. It sucks. It just sucks. The sentiment sucks. The way that it's communicated sucks. You know, you want to hear some black pill shit? Is that I was presented with this clip of Jordan Peterson.
Oh, a crying Peterson?
This was not a crying Peterson.
Oh, my God.
This was a much rarer...
Red Peterson, though? Was he red?
Well, that's the thing. He was a totally flesh-toned, laid-back, calm-seeming, even confident Peterson.
Mm, wow.
And I mean, I'd never seen him like that before, where he wasn't just like kind of wilting or panicking or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or like maybe seeming like he was in a trance at times. But he was very confident, and he was like... I'm stoned, so I'm struggling to summon the argument. But essentially what he was saying was like one of the ways in which you demonstrate that you're a good and moral person in an era where, you know, the sort of central problem is this huge multitude of things to be concerned about
mm-hmm.
is to communicate your exhaustion
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
like the total destruction of your... you know, a capacity to live a normal life or the destruction of your like a normal psychological state. And that's how you, you know, advance to others, the degree to which you care about world problems. And I was like, shit, that's true. He's got you there. There were, as he narrated in the video, the flashing by, you know, in the video fashion, were like headlines and posts and shit. And I remembered these, you know, a variety of them, being like, you know, I'm burnt out, I'm exhausted, yada, yada.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the kind of, I have no more cans.
That's a way of engaging, certainly.
Yeah. And I was like, that's interesting. I would have never, I mean, I know people do that. I wouldn't have, prior to hearing him talk about it, connected that to like a moral disposition. I just assumed it was expressive. I'm like, all right, bitch is tired, I guess. I didn't really put any more thought into it. So you got me there.
Well, he JP. Wins one.
Yeah.
He wins one. You also, you know, having like a, you know, schedule and being tidy and stuff, I guess that's good too.
You got me there as well. There's a lot of Jordan Peterson
no,
stuff.
No, it's totally
where I'm
fine.
Like,
it's
fine,
just,
you're fine.
He's a, but it's just, what a wild messenger. I do wonder if he's still on an all ground beef diet.
No, we got to get a follow up on that.
Is that why he's just fucking lunatics? I mean, I would be, could you imagine? It'd be out of my mind if all I had was, especially because he's like, I can't put sauce on it. He didn't even get to mix it up. I don't even know what he does. He just kind of sears it off and eats it. That's it? Like, no wonder I'm surprised you're alive.
Yeah, how would you, I would assume you would have serious digestional issues if you only ate ground beef, period.
Well, I feel like no one has asked him the $1 million question here, which is like, what level of leanness?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the $1 million question.
I think that is actually the key to the answer to your question.
Yeah.
Because, yes, if we're talking 93 or 96% leanness, it seems like you're going to have some trouble if that's the only thing you eat.
Yeah.
But maybe if you bump it down to 80.
Yeah.
You know, that's quite a bit of fat in there, you know.
Yeah.
Really, you know, win the game there. Speaking of, not a winning game. A losing game.
Oh, dear.
But soccer season's in full swing.
Yeah. How's that going for everyone?
Game number 2 of the spring season. The team lost 4-2, but if you had to guess, who scored the 2 goals?
Ooh, I don't know. Who was it?
That's right, Jane.
That's right.
That's right. 2 goals. 2 goals. So we're back. We're back. Had a off season in the fall, but I'm now proclaiming GOAT, greatest of all time.
Cool. Yeah, the return of Jane, return of the queen. All right.
I need to tally up I should tally it up, make sure she could. I think she's very plausibly the score leader.
Yeah.
It's probably just with 2 at this point. I mean, in 2 games. So, anyways, no, I was excited because, you know, I think I've said this before. There's something really fucking weird about, like, they pick kind of the top 6-year-olds and then they're just like, all right. And then you're like, well, but the top 6-year-old ain't the top 7-year-old, ain't the top 8-year-old. And then they kind of go back and forth and it's weird. And you're like, oh man, my kid's kind of starting to suck a little bit. That ain't good.
Yeah.
But then they like hit some kind of spurt. She's been doing gymnastics, so she's getting like stronger and shit, you know? Yeah. Maybe that helps.
Yeah.
But then you're like, oh shit, she's back at it. She's fucking scoring again. Look at that. She didn't score for like 10 games, and now she's been scoring it up every time they play almost.
You had a heart to heart with her where you're like, you know, you suck. I hate you.
I did. I was like, you know what? You don't fucking try. Is your problem?
Yeah, you did. You were. This is crazy. That seems.
You
want to
know your goal scoring issue? You're fucking lazy.
You know, you got it. You got through to her in a sort of tough coach fashion, but
I basically did do that. Well, there's only so much you can do to kind of be like, you know what? What if you hustled a little bit more? You know, especially because they start to feel bad. And then I want to just be like, okay, look, you're not putting 2 and 2 together here. How about you fucking haul your ass when you're trying to get the ball and score?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think you can run a little faster than that. I've seen you run a little faster than that. So try to run as fast as you can. That's probably going to be the move.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess my perspective on every child activity is like, to the degree that you're having a good time and enjoying yourself and it's something you look forward to and it's like adding something to your life, then I'm all for it.
I'll tell you what they enjoy more than the alternative. And that's scoring some goddamn goals.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but I, you know.
She came up the field and she goes, I scored all the goals today. Yeah. I was like, no, you don't want to say all. That's a little bit, you want to say I scored two goals. You don't want to. I realize they're overlapping claims in this instance, but the phrasing, let's try to chill out with that, if you don't mind. But I'll say it. I'll say it on the podcast.
Well, why didn't you just let her have it?
I did let her have it. I just thought it was kind of, you know, like there's a way of interpreting it. But no, everyone was real excited.
I don't want the kids to feel pressure to do stuff they don't want to do. And I don't want them to feel bad if they don't have like a natural aptitude for something.
No, I was like, look, here's the deal, right? Eventually they're going to start being pretty, you know, they got tryouts coming out. Like, this is not a guaranteed thing. They'll knock you back down to rec unless you start putting that ball in the net. And again, you know, I don't know if you can go two straight seasons while putting that ball in the net. That's all I'm saying. You are a scorer. They put you up front. That's what they want you to do. So
some kind of complex.
Maybe start putting that ball in the net if you want to keep doing this activity. No. And then she did. So
she did.
Solution. Yeah. I'm like Tiger Woods' dad.
I can't imagine that is a good thing that you're referring to.
I'm really not on her ass. It's just she asked me. So what happens is every time we go up to the game, she's like, you got any tips for me? You got any suggestions?
Yeah.
That's where these conversations occur. Mm-hmm. So she solicits advice, which is actually pretty smart, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's kind of like, look, I'm just a kid. I don't know. You watch me. You know, what are you seeing out there?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I do see some things. I do see some things. So... But
she, yesterday evening,
okay. Go for it.
Matt wasn't here. Matt was partying in New York.
I kind of do.
Doing cocaine, whatever. And I was at home with the kids as usual, as always. And, we were playing in the rain. I let them play in the rain. I was like, whatever, it's raining. It's really fun for them to get wet, and I don't really give a shit. So go ahead, run around in the rain, all right? And then they came inside, and I had, like, dry clothes and towels for each of them. And Claire was like, you forgot to get underwear for me. Okay, so I run upstairs to get her underwear. When I come back down, Jane has just disappeared. And I was like, Jane, where did you go? And, you know, figured she went back outside for something. And then she came from the kitchen carrying in her hands like a glass bowl. And it was full of piss and it was dripping piss.
Okay.
On the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, why? What are you doing? And she was just laughing. She just
it is funny.
Thought it was really funny. And I was just like...
She waited for me to leave. She's like, Dad's not here. I can piss on the bowl now. I've been wanting to do that, but I just can't risk it with the old man here.
Look, it is fucking mysterious to me what kind of thought went into that. It was not provoked by anything. There had been no prior discussion of such a thing. I didn't know what to say. I mean, I was just like, cool. I mean... Put it in the sink, I guess, knowing I would have to do the dishes later. You know, thanks for this opportunity to interface with your piss. I had missed that part of our relationship from when you were a baby. Just disgusting. Gross. Why?
You should have made her clean it up. That's what I
wanted. No, then I had to go over the floor with disinfectant wipes and then paper towels. Like, dude.
No, I would have been like, you're going to go ahead and clean that up. I mean, like, it's like when you cook, if you're going to bake, you got to clean up the flour and stuff. So if you're going to Instead of put flour in a bowl, you're going to put your piss in a bowl. It's the same story. Same story. In fact, I would say more important in that case.
I was just like, Jesus.
You internalize the cost of bowl pissing. I don't want to subsidize it and encourage it further. So you're going to have to clean that up.
There's some kind of, there's like something Freudian going on here, right? I mean,
Lord.
Is that when you're like presenting your mother with a bowl of piss? That seems like something from a Freud type dream, right? Like, thanks, kid. I don't know. A few minutes later, she was like, are you mad at me? And I was just like, I'm just shocked. I wasn't mad. I was just like, oh my God, what kind of like witchcraft shit is this? You're trying to save your piss. Gross. God.
I mean, you know, it's a curious, you know, you're a kid, you're curious. It's just fine. It's fine.
Ew. I never did that.
I don't remember doing anything like that, but
I guess boys get to interact with their piss more than girls. So if you're curious about it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you get to aim it around and stuff.
Yeah.
Write your name.
Yeah, no, it must be thrilling. Yeah.
Shall I with the one grab bag item?
Yeah.
Okay. We have our old friend Alex Jones. And someone just sent this to me. So some listener. Thank you. He's just doing his usual rant. There's some lovely music behind him, and you know, I feel like, hey, it's good content from a listener. So
they look up to some twit instead of looking up to Thomas Jefferson or looking up to Nikola Tesla or looking up to Magellan. I mean, kids, Magellan's a lot cooler than Justin Bieber. He circumnavigated with one ship the entire planet. He was killed by wild natives before they got back to Portugal. And when they got back, there was only like 11 people alive of the 200 and something crew, and the entire ship was rotting down to the waterline. That's destiny. That's will. That's striving. That's being a trailblazer and explorer. Going into space. Mathematics. Quantum mechanics. The secrets of the universe. It's all there. Life is fiery with its beauty. It's incredible detail. Tuning into it. They want to shatter your mind. Talking about Justin Bieber.
I mean, I understand. I understand the impulse, which is like, don't our modern preoccupations seem limited and sort of domesticated and tame compared to like the greatness of history and the vastness of human excellence?
But, pick your heroes. Bieber is no hero compared to Magellan.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you that. Yeah, if my child had to either model themselves off of Bieber or Magellan.
He has the kind of like smug lefty orientation. Because remember, he does the same thing for sports.
Yeah.
He doesn't like people who like popular culture.
Yeah.
And it's usually associate that with a lefty who's like, I don't have a TV or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But he's doing it from the right. It's kind of interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Given his audience. I don't know if, I wonder if he does it as much anymore, but it's, you know, it's an interesting thing to put in his little grab bag, you know? He hates the cops, right? That's interesting. He's, you know, but he's also a kind of a, you know, a crazy right-wing libertarian. He loves Trump, but he hates pop culture, and not for strictly anti-woke reasons. You know, the right that hates the pop culture sort of at the, you know, normal conservatives, they don't like it because there's too many gay people or trans people on in the Dove commercial or whatever. Yep. But he doesn't care about that. He's just like he just doesn't like the normal shit.
He just doesn't like pop.
Yeah.
Culture.
He's like, focus on you. They got you focused on the Cowboys and Justin Bieber, and you need to be thinking about the security state and Magellan.
He's just a fundamentally more serious person than the rest of us.
He's so serious.
He's such a serious guy. Although I wonder to what degree is he self-aware?
It's a great question.
He hung out with the Red Scare girls. Was everyone in? I don't understand that meeting still. Was that a joke? Was one party making a joke? Was the other party in on the joke?
Yeah, I feel like that's meant to be layered, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't consume that content.
But I was like, maybe he, you know, maybe he gets it. Maybe he gets that it's funny and he's joking as well. And he's not so demented as he seems. But I don't know. Difficult to say.
Did you see, I'm certain you didn't, but I wonder if this came across, because I had to see this kind of pop across the social medias. A 5-hour debate about Israel and Gaza between Hassan Piker and this guy named Ethan Klein.
Ezra Klein?
No, that's anti-Semitic.
Sorry.
Ethan Klein?
Okay. That name doesn't mean anything to me. Hassan Piker is a Twitch streamer, right?
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah.
I don't have time to watch long streams, but, you know, seems like legit dude.
Yeah.
All things, you know, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't know. I thought that was
that's
just
crazy.
Just in the realm of
5 hours.
5 hours. Who? But there's a whole like sub community of people that then digest it and comment on it. I'm more just shocked by the fact that the spectacle exists.
Yeah. That's incredible. You could do that.
I could, but I would have always said, actually, this reminds me, one of the first, when I started doing YouTube videos, mm-hmm. which I did for like 5 months and then quit.
Yeah.
I was like, I could go through this whole debate between, who the fuck was it? It was like Richard Wolf and Destiny. Mm-hmm. But like, nobody wants to listen to me go through a whole debate about this. And mm-hmm. then one of the commenters was like, you don't really understand YouTube, do you? Apparently they do. Apparently there are people who will not only watch the 5 hours, but also then watch 5 other streamers, you know, comment on it, like run it again, and then like do a like what is it, like Mystery Science Theater type of
yeah like stitches and shit. Is that how that works?
Is this like the loneliness epidemic? What are we doing here?
Hey, you know, this is the new school of Athens, and there are people just gathered around watching the philosophers debate their points. Yeah, you know, teaching in the amphitheater. What's wrong with that?
I don't even mean to say that the people who are engaged are not serious enough to watch. I just mean to say the volume of content.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine.
Yeah, that's a huge amount of content.
Oh my God. 5 hours. Anyways.
Just going back and forth and back and forth. Dear God. I mean, how did they know when to stop? Did somebody win?
I did see the end. I saw a clip on YouTube, on Twitter, that the end, and the guy was just like, I have to go because I've got to go take care of my kids.
Okay. That's fair. That's some shit that would happen to you.
Well, yeah, but like, what were you doing? Who was taking care of him for the last 5 hours? How did you plan that out exactly? Oh, yeah. ChatGPT is saying yes.
Okay, nice, Matt.
This part of it wasn't good. I cut all this anyways.
Okay. Anyway.
Well, actually, I could cut that little bit. The part leading up to it's fine.
Anyway. Sorry for the cut. Everyone.
Everyone's speculating. What did he say?
Yeah, no, it will never come to light what was said exactly.
Now I've got some interesting interlocutions. We need an intro for Matt's interlocutions.
Yeah, it should be like love, fancy little music.
Yeah. Interlocutions. It's the plural of interlocution, which refers to a conversation or dialogue.
All right. So you have interlocutors. What's going on?
An interesting one here. Many weeks ago, I posted that McDonald's workers in Denmark make more than Honda workers in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
you know, just as a kind of commentary on the point that,
sure,
how good a job is, that's really kind of something you sort of set up institutionally.
Yep, fact.
You know, you don't want to lose track of that. Something a little bit weird about some of the manufacturing stuff where people are like, manufacturing jobs are good. And then you're like, really? Because don't you also say that there you could just like do it for like pennies in a sweatshop? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so then they're not really good. They're not inherently good, right?
Yeah.
So like implicit in your position is that they're not, that actually you can do them for almost nothing.
Yes.
So what are we doing here?
Right.
Because, well, you could make them good. We make McDonald's sound good if you want.
Yeah.
In fact, the non-tradable sector is the easiest one to do that shit with because it's not exposed to foreign competition.
Okay.
McDonald's is not competing with China. We want to go buy a meal from China.
Yeah.
That's how it works. But whatever.
Yeah.
I put that out there just as, you know, whatever. I don't know. Tweeting as I do.
Yeah.
And not that this whole piece was about me, but I was mentioned in it. I know because I get my Google alerts.
Yeah.
Dustin Guastella.
Dino.
He, I like Dino personally. I think he has made an error.
No, I'm not going to let you do this to Dino. No, you have to deal with this off the air.
Why not?
No, I can't let you do that to Dino.
It's not a big deal. Well, I'll go through it and then you could tell me what you think, okay?
I have strong reservations.
Still, some argue that the only thing special about manufacturing jobs in the U.S. was the sector was highly unionized and that a more pro-labor environment service jobs would make just as much money as factory jobs. For instance, Matt Bruning notes, McDonald's workers in Denmark make more than Honda workers in Alabama. He's right. Yet as he knows, the Danish example doesn't just show the power of unions. It actually helps make the case for a strong manufacturing sector. For one thing, Danish manufacturing workers make nearly twice the amount that Danish McDonald's workers do. For another, Denmark employs nearly twice as many, 16%, workers in manufacturing than does the United States, 8%. And according to the World Bank, manufacturing counts for a significantly larger portion of Denmark's GDP, 16%, than it does in the U.S., about 10%. Ultimately, a major reason Danish McDonald workers can earn high wages is that, thanks to intelligent industrial policy, Denmark has retained its manufacturing sector. It's because blue-collar Danes earn high wages that McDonald's can afford to pay high wages. The same can't be said of the United States. It's making me spurg. Pushing the spurg buttons. I'm not going to go through all the spurg little moves that are going on in my head right now. Because there's a lot.
Okay.
But I do want to point out one thing. Just because I thought this was really funny.
Okay.
I'm reading it and he's like, well, they're... Denmark manufacturing is like 16% of GDP versus U.S. 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my background understanding of all this as a man who knows about the Nordics is that Nordic manufacturing has gone the same way of U.S. manufacturing. You run the time series. It's like everywhere in the West. You know, first agriculture makes up almost all the economy. Then agriculture declines because it gets automated. And then manufacturing, you know, grows for a bit. And then it declines too, you know, due to a mixture of automation, some offshoring, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's the story of advanced Western nations. There's really not that much difference between them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what? Is it really the case that they're like double the man? That doesn't scan as correct to me.
Mm-hmm.
From my understanding, you know, I mean, I haven't looked up the numbers in a while, but like I have a general understanding of these things.
Yeah.
So I'm like, let me go check this out. Let me go check this out. See where these numbers come from. And why don't you look at this graph here? So we got Denmark in green We got United States in blue. Now, you see, this is manufacturing as a share of GDP. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
You see how they're tracking each other?
Mm-hmm.
It's just basically the same. In fact, Denmark's less than the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Through, like, basically 2000 all the way to 2012, Denmark is less than the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But not by much, like a point.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I don't know. That doesn't really seem like manufacturing powerhouse to me. In the 2010s, it kind of flips, but not by a lot. It's the same kind of thing. It's like they used to be a point behind us. Now they're a point ahead of us,
mm-hmm,
in terms of manufacturing value added as a percent of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
So still, you're like, okay, that's really not a big deal. It's like 12% versus 14%. You're telling me two extra percentage points in manufacturing. That's the difference. That's why McDonald's workers can make 23 an hour. I mean, but whatever. That's not the point here. Okay. He ends up citing this figure. You see this one right here?
I see it.
You see where the line goes straight up?
I see it.
And goes to 16%?
Mm-hmm.
So he cites that one. I'm like, holy shit. That's wild. Like, I didn't know that the line had gone up. You know, I hadn't looked at this graph in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what the fuck? What happened? Like, in 1 year, they went from manufacturing value added being a little less than 13% of GDP all the way up to 16% of GDP. That's a 3-point swing in a year. Pretty wild. Why did that happen? So, of course, go doing my searching. Statistics Denmark, manufacturing. Why do you think that this line went to 16% in 1 year? You will never guess it.
I suppose I won't.
Ozempic. Denmark makes Ozempic. They invented Ozempic.
Okay, cool.
So when Ozempic took off, because making Ozempic is manufacturing pills.
Yeah.
Or I guess they're syringes, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Massive. Big, right. Big drug. And so their manufacturing as a percent of GDP went up to 16%.
Mm-hmm.
Because of Ozempic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I'm understanding this correctly, because of Ozempic, McDonald's workers in Denmark, that's why they can be paid 23 an hour. Right? Now, one problem with this is that they were being paid that before Ozempic. That's one of the one issue with it. But even if they weren't, it just doesn't seem plausible to me that just because that you need to invent an anti-obesity drug to pay McDonald's workers 23 an hour.
Look, when my enemies make a mistake, it's very funny and is a public matter we can all be lighthearted about and have a good time with. But if a friend of mine happens to make a mistake, and I'm not even seeding that that's what happened here, then it's a private matter.
He came at me. How private is he? He wrote in the Guardian and named me in it.
It's a private matter.
He named me in it. It's not a big deal. I don't really care that much. I just thought it was funny.
I don't give a shit, and I don't think Dina would give a shit.
Because of the Ozempic angle.
Yes, yeah.
Because we don't think, the other thing is we don't really think of that as manufacturing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like what, basically, because Ozempic is patented, they can make a shitload of money.
Yeah.
If it wasn't patented, you know, they're already having problems where other people are selling these semaglutides like illegally and they're trying to, like that's a whole thing. But the other thing that is just interesting about it is like, what is manufacturing? And like, literally, it's like, well, I guess, yeah, it's technically producing like drugs is manufacturing. We just don't think about it. People are thinking of like cars and steel. It's like, well, here's a little syringe you can help you stop eating so much.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's that manufacturing boom we're looking for. Is it? I guess. I mean, you know. But also the thing is, I mean, from like a worker perspective, is that like an inherently lucrative thing to do, to stuff syringes with semaglutide? I don't think that's inherently lucrative. It happens to be lucrative for Novo Nordisk because it has a patent on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that the job of stuffing syringes with GLP-1 is like a inherently like super productive task. It's funny also because, like, what does it do? Like, what is the thing that you're producing? You're not, it's not like a good, like, it's like it makes people eat less. Like, I'm producing less food consumption.
Yeah.
And I guess improved health.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
The whole thing is just, you know, and I say all this only because I'm not like, there's something a little cooked, if I can use that word.
Okay.
About people being like, the only way we can achieve distributive equality is by chasing certain kinds of jobs. And there's something very, I feel like, repulsive about that.
Yeah.
Like, it's powerless, weak. What do you mean that's the only way we can achieve distributed equality? Have you not heard of socialism? Have you not heard of the welfare state? You ever heard of a tax? You ever heard of a union? Like, we have, there are egalitarian ways to design the system. Mm-hmm. You do need to produce enough, like, stuff, but the U.S. is productive. GDP per capita is fucking high in the U.S. Even GDP per hour work, pretty high. Like, the U.S. suffers from aggregate production. It just doesn't distribute it well. Mm-hmm. But you can just distribute it well. And you may also have other reasons why you want to aim for a certain sectoral composition. But to be like, we have to get that sectoral composition in order to achieve our distributive aims, that's weak. That's weak. That's just saying, we can't do it. We can't get the unions. We can't get the welfare state. We can't get taxes. We can't get social owner. We just can't do any of that. And it's like, all right, you know, you're in a really funny position if you're like, you know, all those institutions, all those laws, and system design things that can cause egalitarianism, stipulate you can't do any of them, then what do? And like, if that's the question, after taking a long breather, punching the wall a few times and being like, why are you making me stipulate that? You do then go, maybe. But then you also go, but these tariffs ain't doing it. Because here's the other thing with this stuff, okay? It's like, it just depends on what, which jobs are you talking about? Mm-hmm. The ILWU, you know them, the International Longshoremen Warehouse Union.
Oh, sure.
Big on the West Coast. That they had a very interesting press release not too long ago where they're like, this tariff shit is like destroying our membership, mm-hmm. because they just work on the docks,
yeah.
in the West Coast. And so it's like, let's stipulate that somehow you could like replace half the trade that comes from China with manufacturing that's going to be in Pennsylvania and Ohio or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's great. Look at those communities. But then it's like, well, but look at that dock worker community. Now they're fucked.
Yeah.
And now we have a new Rust Belt, the old dock workers.
Yeah.
In the UK, it seems like the docks and the closing of the docks, that's like one of their big things, like the coal.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there used to be a lot of dock jobs. Because that's a blue collar thing you can do.
Yeah, sure.
So it's just, you know, like any change you're going to make in the sectoral composition is inherently going to involve losers. In this case, the losers are going to be in the warehousing and logistics sector, which includes docks. So do you want to lay off those people? My dad worked in warehousing and logistics. I guess that warehousing and logistics is not considered manufacturing by the way we do it. Mm-hmm. But like, my dad worked in a big warehouse that looks a lot like a factory, and he drove a forklift. And that's kind of not that different from like running an assembly line. Like, you know what I mean? I get why it's not manufacturing, because you're just moving stuff around, but it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
And so we're going to shed a bunch of warehousing and logistics jobs? What about the people who live around those logistics hubs? Dallas-Fort Worth is a logistics hub because of the confluence of all of the interstates there. Mm-hmm. So do we want to put, you know, 10,000 people out of work in DFW in order to put, let's say, 10,000 people at work in Ohio?
Yeah.
Then we'll have a new Rust Belt. It just, it's so, like, guys, we gotta get beyond this, you know?
Yeah.
We gotta be a little more thoughtful about aggregates and system design and not get too fetishistic about specific kinds of productions and specific kinds of locations, especially for a country that's 330 million people. If you're a small country, there's a little bit of like gamesmanship you can play where you're like, what if we just were the country that did a bunch of this shit? You know?
Yeah.
You can't really do that when you're just that big. It reminded me of the Dubai airport thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Dubai airport, I swear, I feel like in that piece, it's like a huge chunk of their GDP.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems crazy.
Yeah.
Let me see, how much does the Dubai airport contribute to the Dubai GDP? And it seems like, you know, that shouldn't be, you know, the case.
Yeah.
But you can do that. That's 27% of its GDP is the airport.
Dang. Okay.
And you get it. It's like a little small little thing. And if we can become like an aviation hub, mm-hmm. right, where everyone links into when they're going from east to west, then we can kind of, we can make a lot of money just being an airport.
Yeah.
But if you were to go to the U.S. and be like, we're going to do the Dubai strategy.
Yeah.
And we're just going to have a bunch of airports.
Yeah.
You're like, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
And it works because it's a small nation and they can, you know.
Yeah.
And but like, people basically do the exact same reasoning with respect to manufacturing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. Not he didn't have that problem in that piece, but the Ozempic piece was funny to me.
Yeah.
But good guy. I don't, like I said, I seriously don't. I just thought it was, I got the Google alert, I read it, and then I was like, for real? And then I was like, let me check that out. Oh, it's Ozempic. What a wild claim.
Yeah. That's wild. I'll let you guys duke that out. I was on Instagram the other day.
Mm, the mobile phone app.
Yeah. And I was added to a group chat on Instagram DM.
Mm.
And it became apparent to me in the context of this group chat that Moira Donegan had written a piece in which she took some issue with something that I said and took issue with a bunch of other kind of left people who are on the, like, it's having kids is a good thing side.
No, I saw the piece's existence. I usually don't read because Moira is not an interesting writer and is kind of stupid.
Well, that's what I was going to say is hilariously. So I didn't read her piece.
Why bother?
Why bother?
Oh, my God.
I already know what she's going to say. But when I was telling my the friend about this, the friend who, as the podcast listeners must remember, is like one of the sweetest people alive, goes, oh, isn't she a known idiot bitch? And I was like, absolutely, that is the correct way to categorize Moira Donegan.
I did actually read a response to it from someone else that was included in her.
Anastasia?
Yeah. Did you read that?
I did.
Well, it's pretty good.
She's pretty smart.
Yeah, now I can't find it, but I thought it was pretty good.
It was good. Yeah, it was a Substack post for The Point.
Yeah, you know, it's sad. Again, it's like, do people want to argue or do we not want to argue? That was the thing I got from reading the response. Because, you know, Anastasia is a philosopher.
Yeah.
She does decide up front to be like, look, I'm not going to go into the sociology and psychology of why someone would write something so unhinged, but let's just actually deal with the arguments. And then she does. And they're like, okay, yeah. And it's just, you know.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that writing is able to get purchase in a way. Like, there's no like scrutiny really of it. And I'm not saying it, I don't, you know, because that was an edited piece, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So like someone looked at it and wasn't just like, but doesn't this argument not make sense? Are they really saying that?
Yeah.
So it's like, one, I don't know why anyone would want to write a piece personally where you're just like misrepresenting what everyone is saying.
Yeah.
And then I don't know why an editor would not just be like, yeah, no, but this is not interesting because you're not responding to them. Like,
yeah.
Like, this is an interesting, cool debate potentially. And you are choosing not to have a cool debate.
Yeah.
Like, you could have a cool, like, this would be a fun fucking clash.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of room to clash here. And you're choosing not even to do that.
Yeah. You got to go with, they're actually saying The Handmaiden's Tale. God. Everybody's always saying The Handmaiden's Tale. It's crazy. Handmaid's Tale?
You're trying to figure out what it's called.
Sorry.
I think it's Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. It's funny. It's a great novel. One of my junior high, my seventh grade reading teacher gave it to me. And I was like, damn, that's some deep shit about gender. That's stuff I'll meditate on for a while. And then, like, I don't know, I kept getting older. But, like, The Handmaid's Tale is now the final word on gender for a lot of people in the discourse. Like, the whole thing is condensed down into that one form, and you can articulate all the problems through that lens. And I just think it's a very limited way of looking at women's lives, but whatever. We all have to be the child-bearing handmaids now because I went to NatalCon. That's it.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, this is the one that I thought was really good, right? So, she quotes her saying, the founders of pro-birth organization, the Collinses, assert that there's a crisis of declining birth rates in America, and then in parentheses, in reality, the slight dip in America's birth rate in recent years is almost entirely due to decline of teen pregnancies.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
It's not just wrong, but even if it were true, it wouldn't really resolve the problem. And this is, she goes, well, the point of this, but actually, is to assert that the birth rate's obsession is much ado about nothing, but Donegan's claim is unfounded. The dip is not slight and certainly not the mere result of a shift in timings of birth. But Bonnison's implication does not warrant serious discussion as wrongheaded in another way. Regardless of its causes, any below replacement birth rate means depopulation at an exponential rate.
Yeah.
Like, this, I mean, you know, not to say, but like, this is why, like, I guess Anastasia, I don't know Anastasia personally, but I
she's great.
Okay, so, but like, I read it and I'm like, fucking finally, someone who gets ARGs.
Yeah.
Because so much back and forth, the people don't get ARGs.
Yeah.
And she was like, no. You can have the view. You're confusing, like, well, the proximate cause, the thing that caused us to go from 2.1 to 1.5 was teens no longer having births.
Yeah.
That's not really true, but let's say it was.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it was. And you're going, but isn't teens not having births good?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going, since it is, therefore no problem. That's a logical mistake.
Right.
Because you can both say, yep, I think it's good that teen pregnancy is down and teen births are down. I think that is good. Like, but also below replacement fertility is still a problem and that we needed to compensate for that.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe less births during teenage years, more births during 20s and 30s, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what actually most people would tend to think is what they're saying when they're like, I don't like teen births. They're not like, I want fewer aggregate births per woman.
Yeah.
They're like, well, it would be nice if you didn't do it at 16 and maybe did it at 20 or 22 or 23, you know?
Yeah.
But like, you can see where the mind goes off the rails there.
Yeah.
Where you go, wait, teen pregnancy is, reducing teen pregnancy is good.
Yeah.
And so if that's good, then the result of it must be good. All the results, all the implications of it must be good.
Yeah.
And to say otherwise is to say that actually teen pregnancy, that reducing teen pregnancy is bad.
Yeah.
And it's like, none of that follows.
Yeah.
None of that follows at all.
Yeah.
And, praise to Anastasia.
Yeah.
To be like, wait a minute, the argument internally doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And no. not indulging it in the way that I feel like most people would. You would get some kind of similarly impressionistic response, you know?
Yeah.
Or like a to be sure, you know? Yeah. She's just like, no. Team pregnancy over here, below replacement fertility over the other. To the extent that they, you know, interact with one another, it doesn't actually affect your conclusions about whether below replacement fertility is a problem.
Yeah.
So anyways. And she had a lot of interventions like that.
Yeah. Her piece is really good. I didn't read Moira's piece, didn't feel the need, read Anastasia's piece because it was put in front of me. I was like, yeah, get her ass. Absolutely. I thought the point of this whole episode for me was just that I thought it was really funny that Tatiana said unknown idiot bitch. Which is great, and what I would make my like Twitter bio if I still had one.
Yeah,
it's a great little epithet. We'll be using it all the time now, for various idiot bitches. Also happening this week, the Trump Pope thing. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
You should like Google image search.
Trump Pope thing.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Fuck yeah, it'll do it. AI, all that, you know?
Yeah. The White House tweeted an AI picture of Trump as the Pope.
Oh, okay. Trump posts AI generated. Okay. After he's dead?
Yeah.
Oh, this is like a joke. Like, what if Trump was the Pope?
Yeah,
like, that's not bad. That's kind of funny.
Several people have contacted me about it over the last few hours.
Into the mic, please.
And they're like, you know, they're trying to get quotes about how this is offensive to Catholics. And I'm like, I don't know, man. There's so many memes about the Pope, like. Somebody asked Trump who he thinks the next pope should be, and he was like, me. He doesn't fucking know. He doesn't follow church politics. He's not going to be like, oh, I think it should be Togley or whatever.
Now, you told me anyone could be the pope.
Any Catholic male.
Okay. So not me.
No, you're out of the running for pope.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Anyway, I think it's worse than the administration trying to hassle Catholics. I think it's just those guys on that side of things having fun, and that sucks. It sucks when your enemies are having a great time, but they are.
I had another interlocution.
Mm.
Do-do-do, that's interlocutions. I did the Jacobin May Day event on May 1st. Which is also known as May Day. And I was one of the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
It was me and Nancy Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, and Bhaskar was like throwing us questions and then, you know, off we go, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really think it was like a conflictual thing. Maybe it kind of got a little conflictual at points, but I didn't realize that was like the premise of it. I don't think it was the premise of it, but it kind of started going that direction. Anyways, there were some interesting elements of this interlocution but one of them I wanted to present to the podcast and to you. And maybe I already told you this, but it was an interesting problem. That in the time when it was presented, I just glossed over it and moved on because I thought, well, this is a May Day event. We're not really here to get into the nitty gritty of this particular question. But it's an interesting question. And maybe I've presented on the podcast before. So, you know, people like these big winding intros, I think. So, you know, at some point, Bhaskar is just like, you know, Matt, do your Nordic dance. I'm like, they're great. The Norway, Finland.
Yeah.
You know, I would go further, but I would say kind of like that idea.
Yeah.
But just like more.
Yeah.
You know, just like more. But like that's the basic idea.
The Nordics are the compromise.
But more.
Yeah.
Like not different, just more.
Yeah.
And you know, I was prepared, and I was never going to, like, really push too, but I was prepared for, you know, the usual kind of, like, well, that's not socialism. What about, that's the workers need to own it. And I'm like, ah, I don't know. The state owns it. The people vote for the state. What's the difference? That's kind of, that's been long understood as a socialist thing, you know, state ownership.
Yeah.
Especially of a democratic state. They're pretty healthy democracies, you know. But instead, one of the responses I got from Nancy was, though she didn't phrase it this way, was to point out the gender equality paradox.
Yeah.
She would never phrase it that way because that already implies a certain gloss on it that I think she wouldn't approve of.
Yeah.
But what the gender equality paradox is, this observation in like empirical literature that countries that have the highest levels of sort of gender equality and women's liberation, sort of defined in a very kind of material sense, also tend to have even higher levels of gender occupational-based segregation.
Yeah.
And also like around like childcare type stuff, like who takes leave, how much, who does home care. In Sweden in particular, this is a very famous thing in Sweden, right, is that a lot of like moms of young kids, like they just work part time. And you know, if you're of a certain mind and you usually in the literature, this is presented as like an interesting question, which is like, why? Like, what's going on here? Like, why are the most gender equal countries, in some sense, also kind of the most gender unequal in this other sense?
Mm-hmm.
And like, what's the deal? That's not where she would have just sort of taken it as kind of as a given that, well, that means that those systems aren't working.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, of course, my mind starts racing. I'm like, do I, like, introduce into this conversation the gender equality paradox and, like, all this literature about it? Or do I not, because this is not a panel on, like, feminism?
No, you should definitely.
I thought about it. And then I was like, I don't know. Do I want to? Because the problem is, like, to really introduce it well, you at least need to present as part of it that one of the explanations here is that whenever you create like the most gender equal and like gender liberated societies, what actually happens is that people are able to act out their preferences more.
Yeah.
And that we just do unfortunately see, I guess fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your view, that there are job preferences that are correlated with gender.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what you wanted. How are we supposed to feel about that? Like, it just is the case that, like, in Norway, like, many more women choose to be nurses than construction workers.
Yep.
And vice versa for men.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you have plenty of occupations that are gender equal. Retail, you know, whatever.
Sure. Right?
Food service. But like, there are also these tail occupations.
Yeah.
And they also, it's the same occupations everywhere.
Yeah.
Across the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want to like go in and jump in and be like, try to be real aggressive and pushing it. But it is an interesting question. Why does this replicate itself everywhere? And especially in the places where it seems like you have the least amount of binds on you, right? Like Iran is a good example where people are like, if you actually look at a country like Iran, which we would not hold up as a paragon of gender equality,
mm-hmm.
women are more likely in Iran to work in like STEM related fields
mm-hmm.
than they are in the US, Norway, Germany, whatever.
Yeah.
Why? And, you know, one of the theories here is, well, because those societies are poorer and so, you know, and there's sort of less freedom of choice. And so that actually makes it easier to get women into those jobs because if you leave them to their own devices, they're on average, going to choose these more, as they would say, people-oriented jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're being way more diplomatic about this than I would be.
Well, I have to, because of oppression and woke and whatnot.
Yeah, you've got to be careful about this one.
Can it be presented? That's the question. Is it? Are we past woke enough that you could say there may be some underlying gender correlated preferences around jobs?
Never had to sell me on that. That's obvious, clear, indisputably true.
It might be that not to a person, but speaking of averages, women are more, have a higher number of women have a preference for nursing, social work, teaching, and a higher number of men have a preference for computers, construction, welding.
Yeah, you know, my mom was talking to me once, and she floated the theory that, and I think she read this somewhere, that being autistic was just having an extremely male brain.
Yeah, that's one of the theories.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, it certainly checks out, because every man is a little autistic. They're like kind of bad socially, and they can't read cues that well, and, you know, have kind of difficult times navigating multiple points of conflict and disagreement and agreement in a social scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, whatever is going on there, you definitely see there's a cluster there of interests and tendencies and shit that is associated with men and maleness. And women have a different cluster of things going on, generally, on aggregate, as you're saying.
Yeah, it's a distribution. Course, it's they're overlapping bell curves, as you would say.
Yes.
Similar to height.
Yes.
It's not the case that all men are taller than all women, but if you were to graph the curves, they're overlapping bell curves.
Yeah.
And that's going to cause, if those overlapping bell curves also exist in occupation preference, then you're going to get gender segregation on the tails of certain occupations.
Yeah.
And that's going to be especially true in gender equal societies.
Yeah.
In otherwise, like if you don't define gender equal as if you take that out of your definition, the most gender equal societies are going to end up having the most of that particular kind of occupational segregation, because those are the societies where people are the freest to act out their preferences. They're not bound by, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Men and women.
But what do you
different, not interchangeable.
What do you do when someone presents that as like self-evident proof that, you know, the Nordic socialism doesn't get the job done?
Yeah.
And the argument essentially being there's too many women in nursing for us to say that Nordic social democracy is egalitarian.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what you can say, but I don't know how you exactly put it out there in a panel.
Yeah, especially a panel where you're kind of, you know, the boy and she's the girl, and you don't want to be the one being like, actually, this is just women doing what they wanted to do.
Right. And to be clear, I've got no investment in that. I don't care. Like, that's not my, you know what I mean? Like, there's some people for whom that means a lot to them.
What?
Asserting something about gendered preferences, means so much to them.
Yeah,
I don't care a fucking at all. I don't. There's nothing in my worldview that requires any commitment to gender difference in the toy preference, occupation. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
but to even bring it up makes it sound like you do, like it means something to you.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, like, it's important to you.
Yeah.
And then, of course, people will read into it, which I think is really quite telling on themselves, that read into it something about how, like, that means, like, women are less serious or something like that. It's like, what do you mean less serious? Well, how is nursing less serious than construction?
No, yeah, I find that ridiculous. That's internalized misogyny.
Babe. It is. Yeah. It literally is.
Yep.
Is they just assume that, well, okay, so whatever is the woman dominant profession, then that's actually a lesser than.
Like, yeah.
No.
No.
The fuck?
False. That's the bars are on the inside on that one.
Right. So like it's all chill. It doesn't, there's no literal tension that it causes.
Yeah.
So long as you go, okay, yeah, there seem to be some average differences in occupational preference, but all these occupations are good and important and significant.
Yeah.
You know, and they should be paid the same or like, you know, more or less, right? We try to create equal income distributions one way or another. Whether it's a welfare state, wage just compression, whatever. And it is what it is. And like, I don't know, like, so what?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
The nursing break room was full of fun. And, you know, fuck. When I went to the emergency vet with the cat, it was all women.
All women.
The whole office was women. And that's true when I take them to the groomer as well. I'm sure there are obviously non-female vets, but you know, like, I don't know. I don't know, for whatever reason, the nursing thing reminded me of that. It's like, is it bad? I don't know. Is it a big issue that the emergency vet is like 12 women working in it?
Doesn't it bother you when you walk by a construction site and there aren't a lot of women with high-vis vests on getting like dust blasted in their faces? Like, there should be more women out there in the sun for hours and hours on end.
Well, that's a whole other funny thing. The right really likes to be like, see, so man does the real jobs.
Yeah.
By which they just mean these, like, infrastructure jobs.
Yeah.
You're always like, well, I don't know. I think, like, nursing's a real job.
It's a real job.
People, like, die if they don't get health care. But yeah, it is kind of, like, who's winning? Who's actually winning by when it comes to the gendered composition of construction?
Yeah.
Is man winning? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems like a tough job.
To me, it's yeah, if you're like, I don't know.
Yeah. They're always, their back's always fucked up.
It seems like an absolutely demanding and grueling, incredibly difficult line of work.
Yeah. So, you know, in a very naive sense, you could be like, it seems like women have a good deal vis-a-vis the occupational breakdown in Norway. Like, they don't have to do the fucking construction. That's pretty cool.
No, I'm...
At least the nurses, you get to work in a air-conditioned hospital.
Yeah. I mean, they face a great deal of hazards themselves, but
sure, yeah, you don't want to overstate it, but it's just should we start analyzing the objective like content of the jobs to figure out who is like most disadvantaged by the gendered composition of occupations?
Yeah, I think this is a healthy and productive way to conceive of gender relations, just in terms of who's getting played by who. That seems productive. Good use of everyone's time.
Well, and of course,
contribute enough here.
The thing that allows you to avoid all that is if you get to talk about preference.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, yeah, but like, my job probably looks really shitty to some people. Like, they would hate it. But like, I would hate their job, you know? Like, someone told me that they were like, man, I could not do, they were talking about sort of like the stress of like being sued and like fighting in lawsuits and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is something I do.
Mm-hmm.
And like, man, I couldn't handle that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can, you know, I'm not saying it's nothing, but it's kind of fun too, you know?
I couldn't handle that. I couldn't handle that. I don't know what it takes. Didn't you get a great Q&A in the audience after, speaking of idiot bitches,
my interlocutions. I wouldn't use that phrase. I respect this person.
Okay, well, all right.
No, it's, you know, look, anybody who pops up in the audience is always questionable. Now she has a three-pronged question. The first one, she goes, I thought we're about abolishing capitalism. not just like redistributing, you know, the income from it.
What do you have? What do you have on that?
It's like literally we just spent 40 minutes talking about how to do that. How, like, what is the precise way?
I just thought that we were abolishing capitalism. I didn't think that we were just redistributing capitalism.
When you realize, like, she's lost in a prison of the word abolish.
Yes. Yeah.
And so many on the left, the word abolish just utterly freezes their ability to think.
We're going to abolish the police. We're going to abolish ICE.
You just kind of throw that out there. It's this magical thing. And then you're like, nothing ever seems to do this.
Yeah.
You're like, well, look, so I have this plan where we're going to socialize all the capital and like bring it into collective ownership.
Yeah.
Like, but that's not really abolishing, is it? I don't know what are you talking about?
I mean,
abolish,
I want
firebomb the factories.
Yes, I want all the capital liquidated.
I want America to look like Gaza.
Yeah, I just want all of it destroyed. We have to start over from scratch.
Israel abolished capitalism in Gaza. Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Raise the ground.
Now there's no capital in Gaza at all. And what?
primitive communism now. We're right back at the beginning.
awful way to interpret that phrase. Okay, so right off the bat, you're like, oh my God, we're dealing with this shit. Point two was something about, like, you know, I was defending a narrow definition of socialism where I'm like, to me, it's just collective ownership of the means of production. And when we collectively own and make collective decisions about what we're going to do in the society and stuff, like, we got to be open to, like, that could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
You know, not everyone's going to have your opinion about, you know, how much natural resource extraction we should do.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll have to form your little, like, greenie caucus, and your little greenie party will have to be like, hey, guys, let's hold off on natural resource extraction. I know it might improve our standard of living, but it's bad for the ecology.
Yeah.
And then there would the other side that'd be like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Or like, I care a little bit, but like, I don't think the impact on the ecology in this instance outweighs the improvement in standard of living. So we're going to go ahead and mine that cobalt in order to produce semiconductors, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll have a fight about it. But like, we shouldn't say socialism implies anything about what level of cobalt mining is going to occur.
Yeah.
It implies something about how we're going to organize the cobalt mining and who's going to own the mine and all this kind of stuff. But how much cobalt mining we do, we shouldn't say that is integral to the word socialism.
Yeah.
And she didn't like, she was actually like, this just sounds like 50 years ago type socialism. You know, like, I thought we were well past that. You know, including all these other things into it. And, you know, of course, I'm sitting there and being like, well, they were right. They were right 50 years ago. It's been a fucking disaster ever since then. I mean, looked around. You're looking around, you're being like, yeah, it's going well for social democracy and socialism once we fucking expanded it to mean anything and everything.
Yeah.
Instead of keeping it tight. But the last thing she said, which is the thing you were referencing, is she goes, this whole panel talk remind me of Rebecca Solnit's Men Explain Things to Me, which is a book of hers or an article. I don't know.
Something. Yeah. It's like her, 1619 project. It's just like her brand.
Yeah. And I'm just, you know, I'm sitting here and being like, I'm sorry. Did it say, like, she, her, around Matt Bruning? Like, what did you think you were coming to? It was May Day with Matt Bruning and Nancy Fraser as the speakers. I'm going to explain things to you.
Yeah. I was reminded of Men Explain Things to Me by the part where a man explained something to me.
It's very literal. She's like, I'm reminded of it all the time. In fact, on the subway, the fucking conductor was like, next stop.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, it's just like Men Explain things to me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. God. Men do be explaining things.
It is the case that since all people explain,
yeah,
and men are in the universe of all people.
Right.
I feel like you need a little bit more than that as a critique. And why did you come here to have me to listen to me? I don't understand.
You should have just been like, me too. I mean, every time I think about a man explaining something, it also reminds me of men explain things to me, even when I'm the one doing it.
Sometimes I even think like, women explain things to me. And no, I feel like that's an underexplored
topic. That doesn't happen.
Topic.
No.
And I get it, right? I assume the men explain things to me. I've never read it or whatever it is, but I assume the actual critique is something like, in an unwelcome way, a man interrupts me and whatever, right? It's got to be something like that.
Yeah, my theory on this is it's when a man makes you feel stupid.
That is a cynical take on it. But I mean, if I were to give it something that's not just totally stupid, it would be something about men interrupting and assuming that I want to hear some kind of their spiel when I didn't want to hear it. And even that is like, oh, dude, people do that. Like, maybe men more than others. I don't know. Get a fucking grip. Who cares? But whatever.
That mansplaining, they say, has to do like when men explain something to you that you're actually the expert in.
So who the hell
was this woman?
Who
Why didn't
you?
They bring her in?
I am the expert.
It's true.
I'm sorry. Can we acknowledge that a little bit? I do know a lot about this topic.
Yeah.
I was brought in to talk about the Nordic model and socialism. Who is higher than me on that?
Yeah.
That's my whole bit.
The Nordics can't even compete.
They don't. They bring me over to talk to them about it.
Beautiful thing.
I wrote the introduction to a book that's coming out this summer that's titled Nordic Socialism, written by the head of the left-wing party in Denmark. He wrote the book, and then he was like, we're going to translate it to English, and when we translate it to English, we need an introduction to it in English. For like the Americans were trying to sell it to. And he contacted me.
Yeah.
I didn't know this guy, but he was like, you know who's the guy? Matt Brunick. And then I read the fucking book and he's like, the book might as well just be my goddamn ideas written in Danish.
Oh, no.
I mean, cited a lot. I'm cited a ton in the book. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe when the left-wing head of the left-wing Danish party writes his like opus on Nordic socialism and kind of bases it on my theory of Nordic socialism, maybe I can explain that to you.
She's so fucking defensive. Why does it make you feel stupid when a guy explains something? Chill out. We're all learning all the time.
Interpersonal. I'm on a stage, but whatever. Obviously, these people, you know, questioners, you know, they're a little off
think,
base. But
think...
it did. There was a brief moment, and I'll give Bhaskar this: a undeniable professional. He would not give me the microphone.
Yeah,
he went ahead and filibustered the response for about a minute and a half, and then. Only allowing me, prompting me to only answer one piece of it, handed it to me. He clearly made the decision, I am not going to let Matt answer this question. And I respect that. That was a smart move on his end, and it was a correct move.
He's a very canny actor. Yeah, he knows what's up. Yeah, that's so sad. That's really rough.
It's whatever, though. You know, the questions were great, and I talked to a bunch of people afterwards, and it was fun. Like, I had a really great time. But, yeah, it was an interesting experience, I guess, to say the least. But really, like I said, a lot of Q&As go like that.
I think the women who are pissed about men explaining stuff also, like, seem to fund... Like, I don't know if they... like. I don't know if they're unaware of this or if they're aware of it and it bothers them, but men like to teach women things. And that's great. So when they're trying to teach you something, they're like, here's this communication that we can do together. Are you going to play ball? You want to have this good interaction? And like, you just let them fucking explain the thing. They're just trying to have a good interaction.
Well, yeah, I think one of the
content doesn't matter.
One of the underlying dynamics here that, the theorizers of mansplaining misunderstand is because they're women, they're comparing how they their conversations with women go
mm-hmm.
to how their conversations with men go.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, women engage with me this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then men engage with me this other way.
Yeah.
And it includes a lot of like explaining things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that must be a like gendered thing
mm-hmm.
where they're explaining it to me because I'm a woman.
Yeah.
That is a sort of similar to the Maura Donegan
mm-hmm.
thing, a logical mistake.
Yeah.
You need to compare not how a woman engages, not two women talking together and a man and a woman talking together,
mm-hmm.
but two men talking together
yeah.
and a man and a woman talking together.
Yeah.
Because if the man also explains things to other men,
yeah.
then it's not remarkable that he explains it to you.
Yeah.
There's no gendered component to it. And I'm sorry, that is often how men interact. They explain things to one another.
Yeah.
And that's weird to you because you're thinking, well, women don't do that.
Yeah.
Men do. So not all the time, but you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
That's the thing you're picking up on.
Yeah.
And like, it's not a, like, so they also don't view it as weird unless they're sort of, you know, educated to think it's weird.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, yeah. When I'm talking to my buddy and I like learn something, I tell him about it.
Yeah.
And like, that's like a way we talk. Like I was talking to a philosopher friend last night and, mm-hmm. you know, both of us engaged in quite a bit of explaining
yeah.
of different things to one another, including how reservation prices and wages should affect our understanding of dessert theory.
Oh, all right, cool.
And, you know, he went on a long spiel about that. And I was like, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely keyed up to know yeah. how reservation price theory interacts with dessert theory. I mean, dead serious. I want to hear this. In fact, I was like, send me the paper.
Yeah. Interesting.
But
cool.
If he were to do that to a woman with heavy mansplaining, I don't know.
I think it's just an affective thing. It comes down to how you make the person feel and whether they want to play ball or not. You know, so much communication is just fucking phatic. It's meaningless. No information is being transmitted nor received. It's just people making noises to try to have a positive interaction, right? Doesn't really matter what's being said. They just want some recognition, some sign of fellow feeling. And there's a lot of, it takes a lot of different forms, but.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of bare bones psychological explanation for any of this would just be sometimes you have bad experiences with people.
Yeah.
And you theorize it to be a much more grandiose kind of thing.
Yeah, especially when something makes you feel quite bad in a particular way. But it seems like, you know, I don't know this because I'm a woman, or he's talking down to me because I'm a woman. It just seems like a, you know, being generalized into something that maybe isn't even that widespread. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it happens.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, this is, yeah, look, there's no doubt that some people engage sexistly and
yeah.
will make assumptions about knowledge for that reason. But,
yeah.
You know, there's also, it also doesn't happen. And like, sometimes those things are hard to distinguish because
yeah.
you don't actually have access to the mind, the person's brain. They may not even have access to what their motive is.
That's so true, King.
But I would also say,
so real for that.
Who gives a shit? Why do you care so much
about?
Well, this person explained this concept to me that I already knew.
Oh, yeah. Why do you give a shit?
Who cares?
They're trying
dude.
To be nice. Oh, yeah. My God. Just let them be nice and be like, oh, great. Thanks. That was so helpful.
Yeah. Or like, they don't know what you know.
Like,
also, they maybe are just trying to like, just relate somehow.
Yeah, that's my impression when people, yeah, I always
they're probably not trying to do some kind of fucking psychological game on you.
Yeah.
They're just like, I don't know, in fact, the fact that you know something about it, they're kind of like, well, maybe I should demonstrate that I know something about it. And like, maybe we'll have a conversation or something.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting there, oh, well, I know that already. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I boring you?
Oh, no.
You already know. Is this not novel enough for you?
Oh, God.
Have you been in any conversation ever? 80% of it's fucking repetitive shit. I've already heard it. You know, that's part of the process. If you want to, why don't you move it into something novel?
Yeah. Ball's in your court.
It's very autistic in a way.
I do. Did you see that the lady who said the N-word?
I did.
On the playground.
I was going to bring that up, but then I was like, Liz probably didn't see that.
No, I definitely did. She made more than $500,000 by saying the N-word on a playground.
The thing I saw on it was, that shit's disgusting. All that shit's disgusting. But in the meta discourse, it was some kind of conservative who was trying to say, it was something about the kid being autistic or something.
Okay.
People, I don't know why you would need to do this, but I guess one of the moves, I didn't watch the video, but I just followed some of the tweets. One of the moves was to make it worse. I don't know why this is needed, like to amplify as like a exaggerator to the problem. Is they said that boy is also autistic.
Okay. All right. Well,
so it's like, she's like, it's not enough. She not only called a 5-year-old the N-word, but an autistic 5-year-old.
That's just, like, it's an aggravator.
It's an aggravator, right? It's like, but you can't, you hit 100% when you say the N-word. It doesn't get worse.
Yeah.
So there's no extra that you can do to it.
Yeah,
at that
you don't,
point.
It doesn't add anything to say it's also ableist.
It doesn't because you can't do more than 100.
Right. It's like getting two death sentences or something.
Right.
It's just meaningless. Yeah. But,
okay, so great. Right up the bat, you're like, why are we speculating that this kid's autistic? Because they're fully, maybe he is, I don't know, but from what I saw, it's fully just like based on a video. And like,
yeah, okay. No one knows anything about this case, which is part of what makes it so funny.
Okay, all right, maybe it's even worse that she did it to an autistic. But then one of the counters to that from the sort of like racist right, you know,
yeah,
was autistic people don't steal. Because the claim is that he was stealing from her purse or something.
Yeah, her diaper bag.
And so so he tries to take something from the diaper bag, allegedly. I don't fucking
allegedly.
Know. I didn't see the video. Is it even on the video? I don't know. But that's apparently the claim. She calls this child the N-word. Then someone goes, it's actually worse than that because he's autistic. And then the person goes, nah, not autistic. Definitely did say the N-word, but the autism claim, not true. And we know this because he definitely tried to steal, and autistic people don't steal.
There you go, QED.
What are we doing? What are we doing? The discourse, the little Italian chef discourse.
That's where you have to use the Plato and Aristotle having a conversation.
Pointing up and pointing down.
This is the agora of our day. This is great shit happening here.
And then I start thinking, like, well, what would be the theory why autistic people don't steal?
Saw Rain Man and was like, he doesn't seem like he would rip you off. Like,
is it their rule followers? But a 5-year-old, like, are people, they're born with like a capitalist understanding of private property? Like, because that's the one thing you realize when you have kids is you're like, oh, they don't know that things are privately owned. And it's like, well, of course they don't.
Yeah.
That's fake.
Yeah.
Like, it's a thing we've constructed.
Right. Objects just exist in the world.
Yeah. They think there's nothing, there's no metaphysical switch, as they would say back in the property stuff I used to read. There's not a metaphysical switch in the item that, like, you click it and now it says belongs to Matt.
Right.
So like, why then would an autistic 5-year-old, any more than any other 5-year-old, understand private property? I mean, unless they've been told, you know, but like, that there's nothing unique about being autistic that would have made you been told about it more.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they said the kid was 5 years old. It just doesn't seem that crazy to me that a 5-year-old might get into your diaper bag.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe, dude, Jane tried to steal some shit from Michael's the other day.
God damn it, Jane.
And she knows because she was trying to hide it.
God. She's like an at-risk youth.
She
I don't
is,
know what's
yeah.
going on.
She's
going
to wind up in prison.
Yeah, this is not good. I don't know what to do.
It's because I wouldn't buy it, I guess. So she didn't ask me to buy it. She intuited that I would say no. And so I was like, I won't ask her.
She resorted to shoplifting.
But as far as I know, she's never succeeded in shoplifting. She did try one time before, like a couple years ago, in the Stop and Shop, try to steal some candy.
What?
That's a classic, though.
That's classic. To still be doing it at 8 is a little sus.
Yeah. But... I mean, I used to steal a bunch of stuff from Walmart, just food.
Yeah.
But like, this is the part where I'm like, wait, so what is the autism thing? Because you can go anywhere with the autism. In that case, I'm going with it is I'm autistic enough to realize that property's the, you know, like that's where I'm already at.
It's just so tedious. It's like, dude, autistic people kill people and shit. Like the whole range of criminality that is available to you is available to autistic people. So.
But
it's a child. And now the right wing is also saying, they're like, well, it wasn't his kid. They're trying to position it like the guy was being weird about someone else's kid. They found out allegedly the guy who shot the video, they say, is some kind of sex offender. There was some.
Does this negate the footage in some way?
Yeah, so that's a good question.
This is a new side discourse.
Yeah,
we've got the kid's actually autistic, and then we've got the cameraman is actually problematic too.
Yeah, he's a sex offender.
And
I saw
still
someone...
at the core we have the N-word and a 5-year-old. None of this is obviating any of that from what I can tell.
Someone I saw said she's like the real shield maiden of Valhalla. I was like, oh my God. Yeah, a real shield maiden of the real place known as Valhalla.
What's that? What are we talking about? I know, like
Norse
Viking
mythology,
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just because the Norse stuff but is so wound up with the racist shit.
Yeah, that's the place where it is.
That's where the white utopia is in Valhalla.
Yeah, yeah.
The medieval Vikings.
Yeah, they're like their astral plane or whatever the Valhalla is. It's weird. And then someone was like, y'all are getting psyoped into giving thousands of dollars into a tatted up single mom, which was a dissident right wing take.
She did have that look to her. I didn't want to comment on that, but, you know, there's a look. I've seen it. I grew up around it.
Yeah. Yeah. Much more could be said about her. But it's insane that she's made 600 grand off of saying the N-word, if not at a child, then it's certainly in the presence of a child, at least her own, and certainly the child in question.
Yeah, it does seem like, well, what is the premise of that? Is it that she lost her job or like what is she?
She says she has to immediately relocate for her safety.
Oh, okay. So we're raising funds for relocation.
Yeah.
Okay.
People are, you know. People love to use GoFundMes to register their political feelings.
I fucking know all about that. It becomes a way to, you know, you run a, it's a numerical way to like put points in favor of something. Yeah. I remember like tip jars around elections where there'd be like a Republican tip jar and a Democratic, and you like. Somehow you're meant to be like, oh, I'm a Republican. I'm going to put it in the Republican tip jar.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of It's kind of an odd way to do things, but I guess it makes sense, right? It's like, this is a costly signal of my commitment to this.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a weird way to make money.
Yeah. Yeah. There were like dueling GoFundMes associated with the murder of this kid at a track meet in Texas.
Yeah.
You saw that?
Yeah, I did see that.
That's really bringing out the worst in everybody. It's not good.
All right, I guess we should close on up. This is a big ep, though. 100 minutes. We give him 100 minutes. Oh, I do need to edit.
Yeah, you gotta remember do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Adios.
Bye-bye.